Founders Ramble. Stories from entrepreneurs, how they started, why they started, and where they're going next. Brought to you by the Ministry of Startups.
Hello, it is time for the podcast once again, the Ministry of Startups podcast, which means we're in the pub. Any excuse? It's fortnightly or bi-weekly if you're an American, and I don't think it comes out on a particular day, but it always involves one thing, and that is the epicenter of the Ministry of Startups, the bosom, the founder, the Jesus Christ of startups. Hope that wasn't too much of a big up. His name's Ben. Ladies and gentlemen, Jesus. Or Judas. Anyway, hello, mate.
I'm all good, mate.
Yeah, good.
Ticking along. Hopefully these will be useful to a lot of startups over a period of time, and we'll just carry on doing them every couple of weeks.
Yeah, that's the plan. If you haven't heard this before, they're always available at the Ministry of Startups website, usually on the homepage. And the whole point in this is really to talk to founders about their business that can hopefully thereby mentor other founders and just help them out.
I think one of the things that I took away from the last one was how honest they were about how difficult it is to start. And that was kind of one of the things that I took away from the last one. I think it reassures everyone else that everyone's kind of going through similar teething problems as they try and get off the ground. And I just thought that was kind of insightful. Even if we never have a million listeners, viewers, or whatever you want to call it, some people are able to take something away from it, then I find that quite useful.
I love doing this because I've learned loads. One of the things I got out of last time was the importance on slapping yourself on the back and congratulating yourself when you've actually done something right, instead of beating yourself up about all the stuff that you've got to do. And the owners of that virtual reality company are really helpful at that. And since then, I've been drunk every day. I've done no work, but I'm very happy with myself. Since then, I have actually spent a bit more time congratulating myself when I do something right. Anyway, that's Ben. He runs the place. My name's Vinny, by the way, and I work with Ben with my own business. But we're not here to talk about my business. We're here to talk about two other guys. One of them works in the Ministry of Startups and the other one doesn't. And I don't really know anything about them, and nor do you. So let's find out that now. We're joined by Neil from Rufus Leonard. They are experienced designers. More about what that means later. And you can find out more at rufusleonard.com. And we're joined by Stan from Headliner. And Stan is a resident here in the madhouse that is the Ministry of Startups.
Can we say mad on purpose? Then it makes it...
Yeah, mad by design.
Yeah, yeah.
Although when you are chasing thieves down the road at 5 o'clock in the morning, that is pretty mad, and that's not by design. And also in the background is Elliot, just being a sort of Debbie McGee, making sure that everything goes well and looking beautiful in a sequin dress. Stan from Headliner. Stan, yeah. Hello.
Hello.
Stan is a young whippersnapper of a man who's decided to stay away from the evils of alcohol. And we are doing this on a Tuesday afternoon, so we're all going to go back to work later.
The only reason I'm staying away from it is because we're just post-bank holiday as well, so it's been a pretty good bank holiday,
yeah,
so I'm trying
to
concentrate on a Tuesday again. So Headliner is a marketplace for connecting people who are organising events with live entertainment. So whether you're looking for a DJ or a band or an artist, for a wedding, for a corporate party, we make that happen through the platform. So if anyone's used any kind of marketplace like Airbnb or Uber, without drawing direct parallels to them, we provide a similar service. It's an end-to-end transactional marketplace.
Are you alone in this field? Because I don't know much about this field. I imagine there's more than one guy.
So traditionally, this was done by like an agency, a lot of kind of smoke and mirrors around how you manage talent and how you book talent. So a kind of lot of sharky agents, Arthur Daly types that you'd phone up and they'd do you a deal and you'd book an artist. But obviously it's 2017 now, you don't need to phone a guy up, or you don't need to look at your Rolodex and work out who you need to speak to. Having a kind of visual virtual shop window to be able to look at very professional talent and be able to book them directly is what people are after, is what people need.
Could this be as small as a wedding and as big as a festival? What kind of scale are we talking here?
Yeah, absolutely. So we book 50-person dinner parties with a, you know, a jazz singer, all the way to doing, you know, we did a festival, a VW festival recently with 5,500 people and booked Razorlight. So,
nice.
Yeah, we do any number of types of events, and we do both consumer and we do corporate. So we work with KPMG and Facebook and Mitsubishi and Google.
KPMG throw parties and book live music?
They do.
Do they?
Yeah. And
Bach Ensemble?
They take it very seriously as well. You know, I think a lot of these guys like to kind of shake that image when it comes to parties and entertainment. So they like to make sure they put on good stuff. And again, by kind of presenting the platform in a way, it kind of makes the booker of talent get that slap on the back when they kind of book a pretty cool band or a DJ. And
Says,
how did you manage that? Well, now it's a lot easier to do.
It was all about connections in the past. And also, I think you probably had to know who you wanted before you started, right? So in the olden days, bands represented by agencies, they still are, and you'd tend to say, oh, I don't know who I want, but I think I'll have to go for Razorlight, so I'll get in contact with their agent. You wouldn't go to a web page and go, I don't know what I want, but I think I want indie rock. Oh, I could do Kasabian, I could do Razorlight, all that kind of stuff. So you're making it more of a sort of shopping experience then, are you?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think for most people, when they're booking music, particularly for these types of events, so all the events that we primarily do are private events. So the people that are booking the talent have no idea how to go about doing that generally.
Yeah.
You know, that if you work at KPMG or you work at Google, it's not what you do on a day-to-day basis. And you don't have those connections. So again, having a kind of entry point to be able to do that makes it a lot simpler. And it's been a really interesting experience for us. I mean, when we started, we were primarily focusing on sort of those jobbing professional musicians, string quartets and function bands and DJs. But what's happened over time is that we're getting requests for these acts that have the formal representation, that are well known. So we've formulated partnerships with the agents and management in the industry, and now we can secure better deals for the talent buyer. And the agents in the industry are really liking what we do because we're bringing them the demand
they
that they can't find.
Okay, I was wondering about that because hotels got pissed off with Airbnb.
Yeah.
This doesn't seem to be the same scenario in the music world. You're saying that the agents think, yeah, actually, you're quite helpful, as opposed to a threat?
Yeah, and I ran a previous business which probably operated more within the music industry and was a little bit more challenging in that field. And I learned a lot of lessons from that. And I think what we're doing now is we're taking a segment of their business and we're saying we can drive more of that to you in a world where agents don't necessarily know how to do that. Mm. And primarily, that's done through the platform. And these guys, traditionally and up until now, have no desire really to create a platform to be able to book talent directly. So any way that we can drive business towards them, they seem to be quite happy with at the moment.
Who is we when you were talking about we?
The team?
Partners, yeah.
So there's myself, so three founders, myself, Maria, who comes from an arts background and worked with me on a previous business and happens to be my wife as well.
Bonus. Oh, well, could be a bonus.
Yeah. Pros and cons. Pros and cons. We won't go into them in this particular podcast.
Yeah, after an argument, there's nothing like going to work and seeing her face again.
And Rosario, who's our CTO, she's our technical whiz, so she's built the platform from the ground up. We've got Chris, who's another software engineer. We've got Caitlin, who looks after all of our artists, so she's artist relations and management, so there's 4,500 artists that she looks after. And then we've got Rebecca Lander, who's an ex-talent agent, who's now our bookings manager.
Oh, good.
So she oversees.
So someone really within the industry that knows what they're doing.
Yeah,
Charlie.
And Charlie Feathers.
How long have you been going for?
He's a dog. 2 years.
Nice work.
So not very long.
Are you still at the stage where you wake up in the middle of the night, shit scared, thinking, oh my God, what have I got myself into? Or have you managed to push past that bit yet?
I don't think that will ever change. I ran a previous marketplace business in the music industry before. What we learned from that, we took into this. But I think, you know, as we all know, in startups and in business, there's a challenge every single day that will probably keep you awake at night. I'm not sure that changes whether you're five people or 500.
Maybe we should ask you. You are a slightly more distinguished man. There's a nice way of putting it. Neil from Rufus Leonard, experienced designers.
I feel partly a bit of a fraud to come along, because I've been going 27 years now, 28 years this, one of the things I will say is, like, you know, you do worry about business every day.
Do you still have that now?
Yeah, of course you do. Yeah. You know, I've got 150 people. You still, you know, I'm responsible for their salaries and Christ knows what else, you know, just like making sure the business is coming in, making sure you're evolving the business in the right way to become relevant to clients going forward and stuff.
Yeah.
So it's important. But I think best businesses are ones that you care about like that anyway.
What is an experienced designer?
The way we put it, we have three main things that we do in the business. We do big brand strategy, so defining brands and how they're positioned in the marketplace, and then creating the tools and the elements that means that you can actually portray that, which a lot of the ad agencies and stuff would use. We've got service design function in the business, which is a very grand title, but basically we develop a lot of apps and digital platforms, like all the AA stuff's theirs, and if you go and try and find out any bus timetables or anything through Stagecoach Scan, all that's our platform, but that's really about how do you get that information out.
Yeah.
And then the third part of the business is we work a lot on organisational change and supporting that within large organisations. The reason we do that is the first two parts of the business that I talk about means usually that you've got to engage your teams internally to get them either behind a new way of working or a new strategy behind brands and stuff as well. Mm. We believe you get those three things right, you can actually deliver exceptional experiences for your brand or for your customers. And so that's why we position ourselves as actually experienced engineers, is what we say we're going to do. So we can do the big picture down to the small detail of actually putting this stuff in place. Partly that's a term that a lot of our clients are using at the moment. They're all talking about the experience. So, you know, part of what we've had to do is slightly change the way we talk about our business over the years that we've been in business, because there were different terminology that sort of resonated with clients at times.
Did you start yours from scratch?
Yeah. Started it in the late 80s. So it was, to be honest, I think it's less a challenge than a lot of startups have now, to be honest. I think it was easier in lots of ways. It was easier just coming out into work in the first place, because there were jobs everywhere. It's a fucking nightmare for youngsters now, irrespective of qualifications, to actually get a foot on a ladder going sort of forward and stuff.
Yeah.
But, you know, it was partly easier. I mean, I just had a blind belief that I'd worked for big agencies before, and I just, you know, nothing could go wrong, didn't have a business plan, didn't really think about it, just wanted to do something on my own, really.
Did you have any money?
No. Sort of. I'd had a divorce. When I got married when I was really young, I had this divorce. So I was paying most of what I earned into a previous relationship. To be honest, it was like, if you wrote it down on a bit of paper, it was like the worst time to start a business, really.
Yeah.
But I think that, you know, if you have a passion for something and sort of blind belief in it, and I really enjoy my job. It sort of carries you through, really.
If you'd have walked into a bank and asked for money on the back of the brief business plan you did have back in those days, how do you reckon that would have gone?
I had no business plan, so it would have been interesting.
Yeah, well, you had some. You knew that you weren't going to set up a building contractors.
But it wasn't written down as business plan. If I walked into like a bank manager's, there was around then, a sort of more formal one. And I think they sort of laughed me out of the place, really. I'm quite good with gift of the gab if I'm in front of something, and I can muddle something together if I've got to, but it wasn't really that formal. But the previous place I worked for was a big branding agency. To be honest, they wanted to come up with the big ideas, hand it over to a client, and then sort of walk away and do the next big idea for another big client. Yeah. And I've always wanted to have long-term relationships with clients. I love it. I love getting close to clients. I love sort of like getting under the skin of their business. It's one of the reasons I'm in it. You know, every day is different for me. And I, you know, one day I might be working with one of the big financial institutions. Next day I'm working for one of the big entertainment companies. And it's just fucking fascinating, you know. And
still so fascinating three decades.
It's amazing. Well, it's changing. The market has changed hideously. You know, we started off before digital was really a thing.
Because I don't think I used the internet until early 90s.
We started in 89, and that was principally doing big brand strategy work for, I've always worked for large organisations and big international organisations, and it was really doing that. And we got this opportunity for work for Shell International globally on all their retail outlets, as they like to call it, petrol stations, basically around, there's 48,000 of them around the world. And they wanted to create the standards by which they all run. And we did this project, and it was seconding engineers from around the world to distill the best standards they could have and then republish that. And that was all done and published as a set of manuals, and it's a huge, great library of manuals. And it costs something like 70 grand just to send this set of manuals out, irrespective of the cost of producing them. And I had this really inspired client. Both me and him were into technology a bit, and it was when Microsoft bought out Microsoft Encarta, as first CD-ROM encyclopedia that was around. And we were both had been playing around with this, and we just came to the conclusion we should actually publish all this material in this like CD-ROM format. I was only 25 people then in the business.
Only?
Had to run it.
That's quite
Yeah, well, it would now, when I look back on it, it was still.
How long had it been running like to that. Get 25 people?
That was three, 4 years. 4 years.
Okay.
And it's. There are things that have changed with a lot more outsourcing, homeworking, and everything now. So it actually shapes of businesses are quite different. But anyway, they put this out to pitch. We won this pitch. We understood all the information anyway. You hadn't got a clue what we were doing with digital. I can remember having a conversation on the phone with somebody, asking them to tell me in millimetres the size of a screen, and they kept on going 640 by 480 pixels. I'm going like, what size is that? You know, it's like, fucking, I've got no idea. And we were doing all the designs, printing them out, going, oh, they look nice. Couldn't see fucking anything on the screen. It was like crazy. But anyway, we ended up doing this job, and it went down a storm. And just towards the end of that, which is about another year and a half, so we were into the early 90s, the internet hit all my clients. I had clients walking through British Telecom, walked through our front door with like a wheelbarrow full of money going, for Christ's sake, just help us with what's going on here.
We don't know what's going on, but apparently everyone else is getting websites.
It's crazy.
It was so really weird those days as well, because there wasn't really a value of a website. Like, no one knew the numbers.
No,
so you could go, that's 40 grand. And they'd go, is that cheap? I don't know. I don't know how to compare that, because no one's invented the fucking internet to compare it on yet. So when you hear Stan's story and the headliner's story, one of so many that happened in that building, do you still, like, get that spark of, oh, that sounds like a good idea?
It's brilliant. You know, I know some of you over at Minster's Up, so talk to you anyway. But I mean, I think I still have that excitement every day. I talk to the guy who started the business with me. Doesn't feel like we've been going 27, 28 years. It doesn't. You know, it feels sort of like yesterday that we started. And I think it's keeping a lot of that passion going and interest in what you do. It's not the only way to do it, but it suited us.
Yeah.
You know, so I still.
Well, it depends what you're motivated by. If you're solely financially motivated, then you need to make loads of money. But I don't think that, personally, I don't think that you can keep that motivation going forever, right?
I think it's a different business. I think if you want to build something up to flip it or just make some money, and I admire some people that do that, it's a different business than the one I run.
Yeah.
You know, we do all right. We're a bit of an acquisition target, actually, for some of the people you've talked about earlier. Like, so most of the big consultancies love us. Actually, because we do something they can't do. We understand all the big business strategy, but I've got creative resources that actually can make that meaningful or bring it to life within organisations and stuff. So we're independent still. So we're getting targeted all the time by people that are quite eager to acquire us in some ways. But we're not doing it just from the financial sort of point of view. But we are looking at the plan. You know, I'm 54 now. I'm not getting any younger. You know, and at some point I want a company to continue, and it can't be reliant just on a few of us. So we're building the next generation sort of takeover and stuff as well.
When you were early in it, as Stan is with Headliner now, did you know that you might be sat in a pub with devilishly good-looking people? What was it?
27 or 28.
27 years later. Talking about how you're still doing it, you're still expanding, and you still love it. Did you know this was going to be your life?
No. I mean, I think if I didn't, but I do, you know, and I can't imagine not, you know, I've got great relationships with senior execs and huge clients, you know, and that I feel honoured that they sort of cut the time to talk to me. You know, I've now got a black book full of all those numbers you can just call on anything. I've worked a lot with the MOJ as well, which means I can usually get off anything as well. It's Ministry of Justice, which is quite handy.
So you're borderline gangster, is what we're saying.
No, not at all. I don't think I've ever had to call in.
Yeah, it's nice to know it's there if you need it, though.
But it's that... We have had a passion for the business, and I think if I lost that passion, an interest in what I do, I don't think I'd do it. Now, is that commercially a great, you know, guiding light for people? Probably not, you know. Does it emotionally, you know, make you feel good about your life and what you spend your time on? Yeah, it does.
Yeah, because you spend a hell of a lot of time at work. Yeah. And I should imagine you probably spend a bit more time at work than most people.
I did get to a point where I was doing 2 or 3 all-nighters a week. And the studio, what happens when you get people, when you start doing that and you get a lot of senior people in the business that are doing that, it becomes a culture that everyone thinks is normal. And we had to, about 10 years ago, purposely sort of put in place, you know, trying to get us all back to work in sensible hours, because it was ruining people's lives, you know.
Yeah.
Without intending to, but you know, relationships were crashing and burning and Christ knows what else. And
well, Stan, you're all right, you work with your wife.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know if it's the best way to keep a relationship together, though, to sleep together at work. Have you found this a hard journey? A lot of long hours and a lot of overnight?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. And yeah, when we started, we interviewed for an accelerator called Y Combinator when we just began in San Francisco. Didn't quite make it into that, and then got into the Techstars accelerator here in the UK, which was a fantastic experience in 2015. But it came with kind of a lot of sort of US startup rhetoric as well, which was kind of things like sleep faster, and I'm not really sure how you do that.
A few of us kind of... Your body's writing checks you can't cash.
Yeah, I think a lot of us kind of called that out at the time, and I think one of the things that's quite interesting, you were talking about the fact that it's harder for potentially for businesses to start now. I think it's just different challenges. And I think one of the things that I've struggled with a little bit is that kind of startup culture. I've tried very much to remove myself from that. I think when you see how the sausage is made in that respect, you really don't want to go there.
Why?
Because I think, you know, at the end of the day, you can call it a startup, you can call it what you like, it's just a business. And you're starting a business, and you're starting a business because you're passionate about what you're doing, you're trying to, you know, you're trying to create change, you're trying to deliver value to the customers that you have. In our case, there's two types of them. And that's just a business, and it's not a startup, and you can easily get run away with this idea of, you know, what venture capital is, what raising money is, what valuations are, what exits are. You know, that's for a very small subset of you know, billion-dollar companies. That doesn't mean that you lack ambition as an individual. I think sometimes people just need to be a little bit realistic about what they're doing and drive that forward and concentrate on their business, not on a culture. And I think
also,
as cultures develop beyond
a lot of the big clients I have, you know, they're trying to establish startup cultures internally.
Yeah.
When you really look at it, you want a team you trust, you want people that you can rely on, you know, and you want to look after them. And actually, that's the sort of thing that you do tend to get in smaller teams that are in startups and stuff as well. And that's more important than the rest of the stuff that you're sort of talking about, which is like running after the, you know, the venture capital pot or something.
Yeah,
I think sometimes there's jealousy in the big corporates because they know that they could potentially lose some of their younger staff or not get the younger staff they want, because the younger staff are now saying, all right, I know I get 5-10 grand less, but I'd rather go and do this fun thing. And then so they fight back and go, oh no, we need to do that. Let's put a football table in and so we're cool again.
I think that's the bad thing. I think what's happening at the moment, and I had somebody that's quite senior on the HR side of Google come in to see us. We had a big position on open, and they applied for it. And anyway, she looks after a lot of the HR there. And it was really interesting, they're talking about the fact that, you know, everyone sort of looks at Google and thinks about the way that they motivate their staff, and they've got like, you know, good staff retention and everything else too. She said, there's a huge problem coming up. None of the seniors want to go. There's a glass senior for those really bright people coming up to the top. So they're starting to look at the likes of the big corporates going, how do you handle big HR programs to keep people motivated and stuff as well? So I actually think large corporates are going through big changes now. I think they use rhetoric like startup mentality and all that thing, not necessarily in the right way currently, when I actually think it's simpler what they're trying to talk about. But I actually think there's going to be a bit of change of a mindset with how some corporates start acting and how attractive that might be to the younger generations that are coming out.
They can't be cool forever, right?
I think they've been trying to be cool, and they should actually end up trying to be the business that they are with great prospects for people, but it's different.
Yeah.
And I think once, I think the good ones that are starting to see that are actually going to be those big corporations that do well in this environment where you get more nimble startup businesses around as well. It'd just be different. It's just that I don't think it's the poor relation for somebody to start their career or go for a career in any longer. I think it's just different. I mean, I'm 150 people, right? I'm not a huge corporate. Some of my clients are like 200,000 people or something, you know, it's sort of like that's a lot. Right, 150 people, but I can have, my guys can work 4 days a week if they want to, they can work from home, I can put enough, you know, I can offer some of that flexibility, partly because the size we are. It was harder when we were smaller, because to be honest, every hour was counting from the people that we had in there.
Right.
So, you know, there are some benefits that larger organisations can bring to the way in which people work, but I think it is just changing. The demographic that are coming out now, the youngsters that are coming out to work now are motivated by different things. It isn't just about salary, and it is going to be more about quality of life and actually living what you do living, not necessarily affording to buy the next fast car or the house or anything like that.
Yeah.
We know that's changing.
Yeah.
You know, and that will change the way organisations work, the way startups work, the way everything works.
Yeah.
And that's what's exciting.
And yourself, I'm being terribly rude to stand here not asking you enough questions. Headliner, where do you see it going? How big do you want to be? Do you want to be 150 people one day?
Well, I think it's probably not necessary for us. I think our goal is ultimately to try, you know, in twofold really. One, we just want to make talent and entertainment far more accessible for people that want to book it. Mm. And secondly, we're very passionate about creatives, and particularly about artists and musicians and performers, and making sure that they try and have a sustainable career through the art and the skills that they have.
Yeah, because it's bloody hard nowadays, because you can't rely on CD sales and many of the things that used to be able
to. And I think what's really interesting about the creative sector is that with more and more automation taking place, those individuals that can perform, that do have a very niche skill set, actually in a reasonably good position moving forward in the next 10 or 15 years.
Yeah.
And if they can leverage platforms and technology and tools that are available to them, then there's no doubt that they can have a sustainable career, and we can be sat around a table like this, and one of you guys can be a musician, and we won't think, God, they're going to be hard up doing that as a career. You know, that can actually be a sustainable career for them. And I think we're just as part of that. And I think, for us, you know, the reason we've built a platform and not an agency in respect of talent is that we think that this can be bigger than just a UK business. We think it can be global. We're already receiving inquiries and bookings in Europe and North America.
Oh, sweet.
So our plans to push on there as well. So,
Do you think that you've got a social responsibility to make sure that you nurture and promote upcoming talent as well, instead of recycling the same big headline acts?
Absolutely, 100%. And creating a platform essentially democratizes the talent that we promote.
Yeah.
And so the way that the platform works is that, you know, the more inquiries, the better promo materials you have on your profile, the more you get booked, the better you rank.
And then you get feedback as well?
And you get feedback through reviews and recommendations as well.
So if they turn up an hour late and the guitarist is pissed, then it's not looking good for them.
It's not going to work for us, and it's not going to work for them. So, yeah, we promote, you know, we promote those with the best content that are most professional, and those will be the guys that get ahead ultimately. For us, obviously, I think the thing that's exciting about our business is how we can move geographically and vertically. So at the moment, we're concentrating on musicians, bands and DJs, but we're just about to move into magicians and circus performers, potentially comedians and speakers.
Oh, wow.
Any form of live entertainment that requires booking and talent, there's an opportunity to deliver that through a platform and through the technology that we've built.
Obviously. Neil, in your years of knowledge, what advice would you give to Stan and other up-and-comers with these ideas?
Well, sounds like he's doing what he should be doing. He's passionate about it. You know, you're interested in what you do. You have, you didn't stumble over whether or not you had any social sort of remit in what you're doing as well. So you obviously sort of care about, it's not just about earning a buck through what you're doing.
Yeah.
You want to do something the right way. I was going to ask you whether or not you extend the platform outside of just pure entertainment into things like the business services, where everyone wants the keynote speaker, which is a massive hole, really hard to do. So, I'll just carry on doing what he's doing. Make sure he doesn't have arguments with the missus.
Yeah.
That's a fucking nightmare, I tell you. I used to work with my wife, honestly. I love her.
Is this the one that you went through the divorce settlement with?
No, that's the previous one.
How many have you had?
I only have had two. The last one, so far.
Two and counting.
28 years, same amount of time. So, not sure that's going to be...
Well done. Yeah. Well done, that man. Yeah. Neil...
You haven't met her, so from... yes, well done.
Neil from Rufus Leonard. I think we'll have to leave it there. More information if you're interested at rufusleonard.com. Thank you very much for joining us. You're quite an insight, and I feel quite motivated now. I was going to have another couple of beers, but I might actually do some work. Stan from Headliner. You can find out more and book your acts, and or you can find out more in general on how perhaps you want to become an act that is subscribed and a part of the system. All of that can be done at headliner.io. Is it easy to do?
To book an act?
Yeah.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, our quickest booking's been 24 minutes, so it's pretty straightforward.
There you go.
Find what you want, book what you want, see a great performance.
That was Stan, the co-founder at headliner.io. More information there. And Ben, what do you think of that podcast? Did you learn anything?
Yeah. Then we just got to keep moving along, haven't we, really? And just hopefully, if we keep being passionate about what we do and we're interested in it, hopefully we make some progress and we're still going in 28 years' time. It's like...
And there's nothing wrong with pivoting, by the way. So if you feel like you're not going quite in the right direction...
I can always buy a church.
Oh, God. Oh, God.
Ben's very been nice church.
He's been talking about buying a church all morning. It's 20... Yeah, it's on an island in Scotland. And it's quite difficult to get to.
I mean, said it was only 20 minutes from Glasgow.
An hour and 20 minutes.
Oh, an hour and 20
it's
minutes.
It's in the arse end of nowhere. It's on an island. You know, we can't do it. Ben said, I'll buy a ferry.
Oh, it gets even better.
Yeah. It's another business.
Yeah,
so exactly.
You might get less thieves.
Got to hope
they'll all be on jet skis.
Yeah. Yeah. They'll all have swag bags up there, so you'll be able to identify them.
You go, ah.
Yeah.
Ben from Ministry, thanks for putting it together.
So I did.
My name is Vinnie White, and that has been
Founders Ramble. Stories from entrepreneurs, how they started, why they started, and where they're going next. Brought to you by the Ministry of Startups.